and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday afternoon, and we are deployed. I'm talking to you from Phoenix. At some point, I'll make my way to New Orleans. Joining us from north of the border, going to Toronto for the first time in like 800 days since the 2019 finals, crossing the border, allowed into the country. Will he be allowed back? Yet to be determined.
They can keep
him. Bontemps.
Yeah, we'll see. Everybody here is very happy to see me, unlike Ben McMahon, who's not happy about anything right now. So even more than usual.
Joining us from the arena in Utah, which I can't remember the name of because it's changed like three times in the last 5 years.
It is now just Vivint Arena. They've gotten rid of like the smart home and whatever other words used to be in between. It's now just Vivint Arena.
But before that, it was named after a nuclear waste company.
Yeah.
And I will say that a moment ago, Ben McMahon, you had, for those of you who are watching on YouTube, McMahon had this awesome view of the arena behind him. It was like this great view, but we couldn't see him. So we turned around and now he looks like he's in a boardroom.
Do you want a quick arena? Do you want a quick arena shot? Hold on. Look at
there
that.
There you go.
I got all McMahon, them purdy colors out there.
Yeah, that's for our audio listeners. That is going to be huge for them.
Huge.
Anyway, Band McMahon.
Well, listen, if you want to enjoy this podcast, I am best in a visual medium. Unfortunately, we got Bontemps on here too, so I don't know what to tell you.
Again, I will say, unless I am going to be, lest I be accused of bias later, Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
Okay.
I'm not in there a friendly mood. It's hard to generate a howdy partners when I'm kind of in a little, kind of
very
grumpy.
Flustered. Very I mean, flustered.
He's on the road.
Technical difficulties. Road. I'm back to wearing like the all twisty, choky headphone.
The listeners at home have no idea how much tech support Ben McMahon has at home. And when he's not at home, it doesn't have the tech support. Things go off the rails really fast.
Anyway, he's in Utah. We won't know what will happen in tonight's game three between the Jazz and Mavericks, but we do know a lot about what else is going on in the playoffs. And I don't even know where to start. I think I should start with the Celtics Nets series. I think it's contractual at ESPN that we have to start with that series and end with it, I believe as well. I am so happy that that series is not on the night so far of the Suns Pelicans series and that I can watch it in the games because I'm really enjoying taking in this series. I think Bontemps, I think you've been working because for some reason Philadelphia Toronto is on the same nights.
I was able to watch all of game one uninterrupted on Easter Sunday. And last night I was watching game two while also watching the game I was at here in Toronto at the same time. Fortunately, it started an hour earlier. So it sort of lined up where the end of the game basically happened during halftime. So I was able to sort of watch both, but it was not easy.
So it is.
You're a talented young man.
I try.
I don't think it was ever discussed on this podcast. It was discussed, but I don't think we ever advocated for it. I know I didn't, but there was a time this year where people were talking about whether or not the Celtics should consider breaking up Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And seeing this series where Kevin Durant, and it's only two games, it doesn't define the series, but seeing how much trouble Kevin Durant is having dealing with the size and depth of the Boston wing defense. The concept of ever breaking these guys up now seems just like pure folly. And we talked a lot in Bontemps. You've been at so many Celtics games this year. They obviously had great defense throughout the season. This game plan combined with this personnel combined with the shortcomings of what Brooklyn has is resulting in a perfect storm of defense that we've never seen deployed against Durant in his 15-year career.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, like you said, this is a lot of things coming together all at once. You know, go back to November when I wrote the big story about the Celtics kind of being a mess at the beginning of the season. And since then, they've fixed basically all the things that were a problem then. They got rid of a lot of, frankly, bad players. They replaced them with guys like Derek White, and Daniel Tice, who fit exactly how they want to play. They've gotten much better at moving the ball around on offense. We saw in game one that play in the final 10 seconds of the game when Jaylen kicked it to Marcus, who kicked it to Jason Tatum for a layup. That's not a play that the Celtics would have made in December. That's a play they made once they all kind of bought into this way they're going to play. And you go back and, you know, even go back to last summer, trading for Al Horford, moving out of Kemba Walker, giving up a first round pick, bringing in Al Horford. All these things together have combined to turn the Celtics defense into one that is as good as the best playoff defense I've ever seen, which is the 2019 Raptors defense, which just had unbelievable length and smarts and size all over the place. And the Celtics have the same thing. And you couple that with going up against a Nets team that doesn't, frankly, run a lot of stuff. They're basically going to come down and isolate and shoot jumpers. You know, KD and Kyrie, that's what they're going to do. You saw in game one, Kyrie made a ton of difficult shots, which when he does, he looks like the most spectacular offensive player you'll see. And then he'll have games like game two where he doesn't make anything and is sort of not involved in the game except for getting scored on defense. And then Kevin Durant, to me, looks like a guy that's from the moment he got back, what was it, 6 weeks ago, probably, he came back from this injury. He's been playing 40 minutes a night, every night, mm-hmm. for now 6 weeks. And he looks like a guy that is exhausted. And the combination of that minute load on him, and then to your point, Brian, going up against a Nets team that's got Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, Derek White, even guys like Al Horford and Grant Williams who can switch out on a pinch onto Kevin Durant. The Celtics are just being physical with him. They're banging him all the time. They have the ability to stay right with him and in his airspace all the time. And it's just a combination that has made life incredibly difficult on those guys to score for every second they've been on the court. And that's only going to get harder because starting on Saturday, this is going to be an every other day series the rest of the way. And that, I think, is going to be an even bigger burden on this Nets team because those two guys have to go every second of every game. And they just don't have the same ensemble cast that the Celtics do around.
Last 11 games before you go, McMahon, just the last 11 mm-hmm. games, Kyrie, 41 minutes a game. Durant, just a little under 40. I'm going to round up to 42 minutes a game.
Well, hey, Kyrie ought to have fresh legs. And it's really impressive that the Celtics have been able to play this level of defense against one of the most potent offensive teams when they lost one of the best defensive centers in the NBA. And by that, I'm referring, of course, to Ennis Freedom. no, but it is absolutely insane that there was any kind of discussion about breaking up Tatum and Brown, because what does every team in the NBA want?
Long, athletic, young, two-way wing players.
Yes, young, dynamic, long, athletic, two-way wing players. And both of these dudes can shoot it, can put it on the floor, can guard. I mean, really, you could say they can do pretty much everything except for, I'm not sure I'm going to say Brown's much of a passer. Marcus Smart did kind of point that out earlier in the year. But Tatum in particular, like, he's not just one of the best young players in the league. He's legitimately one of the best all-around players in the league. And last night he didn't shoot – or Wednesday night, I guess – he didn't shoot the ball that great, but still, two straight games, this guy has straight up blocked a Kevin Durant jump shot. Like, defending him one-on-one, got up and got a Kevin Durant jump shot. That doesn't happen. Jason Tatum is obviously one of the best scorers in the league. He's also one of the best wing defenders in the league. I mean, this is, you know, he is absolutely made the, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily a jump, but took that next step up to where he is a first team all NBA type of guy. And then, and you know, we've also talked about, like, the Celtics, they're not, there's no reason for these guys to be intimidated or scared of anything. You know, Kyrie was on the roster, but he wasn't on the floor when these guys went to the East Finals, when they put a scare into LeBron's Cavs, took them to seven games. Tatum and Brown are proven, you know, Smart obviously is part of that. Al Horford, I mean, hey, Al Horford caught a lob pass too. Speaking of, and threw it down. Speaking of fresh legs, the Celtics might be, especially pending Chris Middleton's health concerns, they might be the best team in the Eastern Conference.
We'll talk about Middleton in a second. Yeah,
two other things about Tatum: 10 assists, 3 turnovers in that game last night. Even though he went 5 for 16, like you said, McMahon, you know, he and Jaylen Brown both are not. They're still works in progress as creators, but they've gotten better at it, Tatum in particular. And an executive a couple of weeks ago said to me that He thought the most important thing that's happened in the last 2 months is Jason Tatum has become the player everybody thought he was already. And I really think that it sums up where the Celtics are. All these other things have come together. The development of Robert Williams, getting Al Horford back, the addition of Derek White, removing these bad players from the rotation, Grant Williams losing a bunch of weight, getting a lot quicker, becoming a really pivotal piece for them off the bench, kind of a younger version of PJ Tucker. You put all this stuff together. The thing that tops it off is Jason Tatum is now a franchise level player, a truly franchise level player.
And that's the guy you need to win deep in the playoffs. And a rookie head coach. It took a little while for everybody to kind of get on the same page or whatever it was, but a rookie head coach has, you know, he has done a heck of a job.
Let me say something about Ime Udoka. When you think about the journey he is on with Kevin Durant, he played against him as a player, was, you know, one of the top, you know, wing, you know, a defensive specialist, definitely played against him as a player. When he joined the Spurs coaching staff, he game planned and dealt with him as an assistant coach in a playoff series against the Thunder and against the Warriors. And obviously, you know, when you game plan against a playoff series, you come up and search everything. Then he became an assistant coach with the Nets. I mean, he was with the Sixers too, but more interacting with him with the Nets. So he had him, you know, every single day. Then he was an assistant coach on Team USA with Popovich, where Durant played. And so now with the Celtics, he has put in years on years of learning, studying, finding out idiosyncrasies of Kevin Durant. And look, you can design the best defense of all time. You don't have the personnel. It's not going to work. So I have talked about how watching this series reminds me of a 2014 playoff series where the Grizzlies played against the Thunder that I covered. And Tony Allen was the first guy I ever saw really bother Durant. And I know that this is to say this, it kind of upsets people, but I would say so much as getting in Durant's head, because I remember there were times where Allen would get lost on a screen and Durant would catch the ball. He was so used to Allen being up on him and bodying him that he would catch the ball and protect the ball and not even turn around and look to shoot, that he had a wide open shot because he was in his head. But Tony Allen's 6'3", 6'4". There's one of him. He couldn't hold up on the size and the duration. The Celtics have a number of Tony Allen-type players that are bigger. What I mean by Tony Allen-type players, relentless, strong defenders. Yeah. They have a whole rotation of those guys. And so Udoka has watched how to do it. And the other thing that has been pointed out to me by scouts, the Nets don't pressure the rim at all. They have no interior game. Their entire offense is predicated. Now, they do throw, when their offense is humming, which it is a lot, they do move the ball pretty well. But the Celtics have, and one of the reasons why the Robert Williams absence is not hurting them as much is they don't have the need to worry about defending the rim as much. So they can press up on Durant. And my God, are they. And in game one, the officials let them get away with everything on Durant. In game two, the Celtics were just as physical. Durant got way more fouls. He had 20 free throws. How can you look at a guy and say, oh boy, he had a really bad offensive game. He had 20 free throws. How is that a bad offensive game? Well, he shot a very low percentage because he got,
and he turned it over.
And he turned it over. And so because they were up into him. So, and I think that's just a combination of personnel and Udoka learning what Durant doesn't like. And after we've talked about this for 10 minutes, it wouldn't stun me if the guy went for 48.
Oh, no. Durant is always capable. Like, he's going to have to take tough shots. Kevin Durant is a really wealthy man because he's one of the best tough shot makers that we've ever seen in our life. And so is Kyrie. But they are taking tough shots and they're living and dying on a high degree of difficulty, mid-range jump shots. And that's a tough way to live. By the way, how about Marcus Smart
How about this show going on in the arena?
I was going to say, are you going to make it out of the arena, McMahon?
I just didn't want people to think that Bontemps was heavy breathing down someone's neck in the background. This is pregame.
Wow.
It's the Canadian Mounties in hot pursuit of Bontemps. I don't know what's going on there. It is somewhat entertaining. This is like what Durant hears, whether it's Tatum or Brown or Smart or Gray. Like, this is all he hears. You try shooting jump shots when you're hearing this heavy breathing up on you. But how about Marcus Smart celebrating his Defensive Player of the Year award? Sensitive subject here in Salt Lake City, so I'm going to kind of whisper here. But showing up with the DPOY robe and then just absolutely smothering Kyrie Irving for 48 minutes in a win.
Well, look, and it's like you said, I mean, first of all, that was the case, right? Kyrie came back to earth in game two. And also, like, to talk about the Nets for a minute, they lose a game where Kevin Durant shoots 20 free throws. They lose a game where Bruce Brown, Seth Curry, and Goran Dragic go by to go 22 for 37, hit 8 of 15 threes, and score 57 points. Like, that's the game that they need to win. And on top of that, you watch this Nets team play, and I don't know if it's because of – I'm really starting to worry about McMahon here. I don't know if it's because of, you know, what Kevin and Kyrie want. I don't know if it's because they don't want to do anything different or if Steve Nash just doesn't think they should do anything different, but these guys don't run a lot of stuff. It's a lot of isolation, walk down, take a difficult shot. They're not running a lot of screens for Durant. They're not doing a lot of things to kind of get him space to operate. And as a result, it's, you know, like, I'm not trying to take any credit away from Ime Udoka. He's doing a hell of a job, but at some level, it's just the simple fact that the Celtics have these guys that could get up in the Nets. And so they are, and the Nets just aren't really countering it. Just kind of like, oh yeah, well, I guess they're going to guard us. So we got to just make really hard shots. And yeah, Kyrie in particular is going to have some games where he makes a ton of really hard shots, but over seven games, that's why I picked the Celtics to win the series in the first place. I just didn't think that the Nets could do that four times out of seven. And the fact that they couldn't get either of these games in Boston, I just think it's going to be really hard for them to get back in the series.
I was going to pick the Mavericks in this series, but apparently the Jazz have a dragon that lives inside their arena that is now hunting. So now I'm reevaluating that series. I just think I definitely, just because the series is 2-0 does not mean it's over. I don't even know what the Ben Simmons thing is going to be. We're going to wait and watch on that. But I will say this. I think beating this Celtics team as they're currently constructed, assuming the health, 4 out of 5, I think is a huge ask at this point. Even though as poorly as it has gone for the Nets, they were razor close to winning game one. And in game two, Durant and Kyrie were awful. By the way, Kyrie touched the ball one time in the last 3 minutes of this game, physically had his hand on the ball, and that was to inbound the ball to Durant. He didn't even have the ball on the open floor in the last 3 minutes of that game. And the fact that it was a 7-point game with Kyrie playing that non-existent and Durant having the worst shooting half of his career, it does portend that this series is closer than 2-0. But the demands on Kyrie and Durant and the fact that they now would have to win 4 out of 5, obviously, I think the Celtics are in great position there.
Well, no, when they blew game one, and Kyrie obviously was spectacular in game one, but maybe if he'd have lifted a middle finger on that final defensive possession, this would be a 1-1 series.
Unfortunately, we've got injuries starting to dominate the playoffs. That happens every year, but you hope that it wouldn't be this significant. The first in the series that I'm with, Devin Booker, and this was, I'm sure, deja vu for Devin, but I was here for a game against the Warriors earlier this season, and almost the exact same spot on the court, he had a hamstring injury. On that one, he was driving in transition and going up. I believe he was going up for a layup or a short jumper, but it was definitely a transition play into a jump, and he tweaked his left hamstring. He missed 3 weeks on that one. But same thing, immediately had to come out of the game, went to the back, not seen for 3 weeks. This one, he has a 31-point first half. I am looking up the records. The only son to ever score 50 points in a game was Charles Barkley at 56 in 1994.
In the finals, wasn't it?
I think it was game three of the finals. So I'm preparing to cover him at least scoring 50. And he goes up to challenge Jackson Hayes again, running and then jumping, like running in transition into a jump. This time he tweaks his right hamstring. Again, immediate timeout, limps off the floor. He's out indefinitely. Hamstring injuries are tough. You know, no one questions his toughness. He played through a hamstring injury in the finals last year, but likely going to be out at least a few games. I think the series is in some question, but I'm not going to doubt Devin's ability to play. And so we've got that injury. And then last night, Milwaukee, Chris Middleton goes down in kind of a weird play, just was driving to the basket and like lost his footing.
Very reminiscent of Steph Curry against Houston in 2016.
That was when he slipped and fell. Right. And so, and they didn't even wait for the MRI. They just came out. Bud came out for the game and said sprained MCL. And even a mild sprained MCL, Jeff Stotts at In Street Clothes, which we rely on his database. He says mild MCL sprains, average return is 17 days. Now, that is not an average in the playoffs. In the playoffs, people push injuries. But, you know, this is these are 2-1-1 series, heavily favored teams who have now lost home court advantage and are 1-1. The Pelicans are a dangerous team because they have really interesting top end talent with McCollum and with Brandon Ingram. Ingram, the Booker injury kind of took it over, but Ingram had 37, including 26 in the second half. He was Durant like.
Yeah. And like what? 11-9. I mean, he did everything.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And
that was a crazy stretch in the fourth quarter of that game where I think I went back and double checked it because I thought I saw it in real time. Neither team missed a shot for like 3.5 minutes. It was wild. Like they just were going back and forth, making one three after another, one play after another. And, you know, it was full credit to New Orleans. Like, you know, how many times have we talked about clutch time on here? It's Brian's favorite thing to talk about, right? Clutch time for the Suns. They're going to roll and win the game. Yeah. And New Orleans, I know Devin was out, but in Phoenix, yeah. New Orleans goes there in and wins clutch time. Yeah.
Yes. So it's with 4 minutes to go, with 5 minutes to go, it's a 4-point game. Yeah. Now the Pelicans were ahead, but at that moment, even without Booker, I would have wagered on the Sun. By the way, the Suns in clutch time this year. speaking of wagering, by the way, mobile, I'm still learning this whole, I mean, I don't bet, but mobile betting is legal in Arizona, and we sort of sit in the stands, and there are people all around me. I hear, now I'm not talking about media, I'm talking about fans. There are people all around me wagering on the game. They're like yelling to each other, Booker getting 40 is, you know, plus whatever. And, you know, these people are betting up a storm. I mean, it's wild that people are smoking joints out on the street before the game and they're live betting games that they're at inside the arena.
You only partake in one of those. you get any bets in on the golf course? I heard you played some golf out there. Got some of that Arizona sun.
If you're asking me whether I have a lot of makeup on right now because of my TV hits. Otherwise I would look like a lobster. I'm not denying that. I will deny using any of the other substances or sports betting, but I will not deny wearing a significant amount of makeup on my face right now. So anyway,
I wish Bontemps would.
If I did wager, I would have wagered on the Suns at that point, and they didn't finish it. So what do we think New Orleans's position here is in this series? I still think the Suns are extremely focused. Experienced. They did go 8-3. They had a couple of games in this season where they're resting a lot of guys. So their record without Booker technically is 9-5, but in the real games that they played everybody, it's 8-3. I still think the Suns are going to win this series, even if Booker misses it. But I'm going to tell you something, guys, I made hotel reservations through 5 games in this series. I have made reservations for 6 and 7 because I do think we could get into that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure this is still going to be that competitive ultimately. I mean, Devin Booker's awesome. He was fourth on MVP ballot. I'm not trying to diminish the importance of not having him out there, but the Suns have been awesome all season. And yes, the Pelicans were better with CJ McCollum. They were a little bit above 500 team after that trade. But do we really think that they're going to beat the Suns 3 out of 5 games here and knock them out of the playoffs. I just can't see that. I think this and the Middleton injury, you know, which we'll get to in a bit, I'm sure, are really to me on the same track, which is that these teams are going to win these series, barring something crazy happening. The real question is, what does Devin Booker look like in the conference semifinals? And what does Chris Middleton look like in the conference semifinals? Because that's the series. I mean, we already talked about it. I thought that the Dallas Mavericks, if Luka was healthy, were maybe the biggest threat to Phoenix. If they got to play them and Devin's less than 100%, that's going to be a problem if Luka's back. And in the East, Chris Middleton, if he's not there and they got to play Boston in the second round, that's going to be a huge problem. So to me, that's where it comes in. I just cannot see the New Orleans Pelicans winning 3 out of 5 in this series, as God talks down to McMahon right now in Utah and smites me for saying that.
What about the Jazz? Too?
Oh, man, this is trouble here. This is trouble.
Jazz in 5.
Okay. Tell you what, I need to relocate, fellas. I'm sorry. This has not been smooth. I'm gonna relocate down to the media room. Sorry about that.
Is that okay? It's all right, guys.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I'm just afraid they're gonna do.
Who are just decide? Is McMahon just deciding to take over the pod? Is this okay for everybody else?
It's a total disaster.
Next, we are gonna hear the national anthem. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Supercuts. Let's face it, life is busy. Between work and family and more work, our to-do lists have a way of getting longer instead of shorter. Luckily, Supercuts is here to make at least the haircut part of your life easy. Supercuts is perfect for people who need a haircut but don't have a ton of time for a haircut. No more scouring the web for salons with availability. You can use the Supercuts app to find the location nearest to you and check in or just walk in. Another bonus, the salon shows estimated wait times, so you know exactly what you're in for. That way, you're only in salon when you need to be. And don't expect to stay a while. As for the cut itself, it's always super solid, thanks to Supercut's highly trained stylists. Get in, get out, and get to that thing that you needed a haircut for. Whether you've got a big presentation coming up or a wedding, or you just need some upkeep, Supercut's makes getting a haircut effortless. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts. Check in now on the Supercuts app or on supercuts.com.
All right. McMahon is relocated out of the Arena Bowl into the press conference room. He's now sitting in Quinn Snyder's seat. Hopefully Quinn will not come in there with any.
So let me deliver a 19-minute soliloquy on why I can't say the word soliloquy. On why, you know, listen, I heard that Rudy and Donovan ate lunch at the same table the other day. And like, you know, all those people leads.
Real talk. I don't know what's going to happen with Doncic in this game tonight or in this series. But if you're the Jazz, you got to be sitting there going, okay, we're 1-1. We've taken home court. Luka is somewhat diminished. Maybe he won't be diminished at all by game 5, but he's somewhat diminished. We're looking at the Suns over there in a dogfight. We don't know where Booker is going to be. The Jazz have had things go against them a little bit over the last couple of years at times. Their position is in much better shape. And I don't know. I mean, we shouldn't talk about the Jazz if they could lose tonight. But
yeah, much like when Kawhi Leonard went down when the Jazz were up 2-0 in that series. That didn't work out so well. Sorry, that was a bad example. Yeah. Bad example.
I have been told that I don't know if it's true, but I have been told that Donovan and Rudy are in a better place now than they were earlier this year. And that there is a spirit of working together. I know everybody's counting passes and that's not irrelevant, but I have heard going into the playoffs that there was an attempt being made to let's all focus on one goal, which there should have been.
Yeah. I do think that there is a deal with the Jazz where it's just like, listen, we'll deal with this summer when this summer comes, but let's try to delay that as long as possible. And, you know, if this is the last hurrah, give it a full go. Having said all that, and we shouldn't talk too much because they're playing tonight and it'll be irrelevant. You know, they've had some flaws that were well known that were exposed once again in game two. You know, so we shall see. But, you know, I think we were on before the Dragon got me. I think we were on the Bucks and Middleton and, you know, what could be coming there. I don't think the Bulls can beat them with or without Middleton. I just don't. But I think then you're asked the question, okay, the Celtics sure can, you know, and that would be pretty concerning if he's not right for next series.
Well, I'm a big believer in Jason Tatum. I'm a big believer in Giannis. I know these are not hot takes.
Yes. Ryan believes in good players.
Well, listen, I mean, some people thought they should, you know, break Tatum up, but I had Tatum fifth on my MVP ballot. And it says a lot to me that the Celtics can win a game where Tatum goes 5 of 16 in that series. And the one thing and that's because the supporting players were great. Peyton Pritchard was great in that game. Grant Williams, as Bontemps mentioned, was great. The thing about the Bucks that I'll bring up is I know that there's no guy that they can put in that fills the role that Chris Middleton does, especially defensively, but Brook Lopez has been way better than I thought he would be. And considering that there was significant doubt whether he would even get back on the court. And I don't mean like in December, I mean like within the last 6 weeks about whether he could actually do it. And he's delivering some offense that I didn't expect from him. I mean, I think he had 26 or 27 in game two.
People forget Brook Lopez, the first half of Brook Lopez's career, he was a guy who was known as a scorer who didn't really play defense. Like that was what he was initially known as. Like he can fill it up if needed. And they're like, to your point, they're going to need him to fill it up and they need Drew Holiday to fill it up while Chris is out.
Yeah. Drew Holiday needs to play better. That is now clear. I believe that he will. So, the Middleton thing is a bummer, but hopefully not season ending, hopefully not even series ending, although that is a big ask with that knee injury. But we're going to learn a lot about the finals teams from last year, but I think I know a lot about them. So I'd love to see, you know, new blood, of course, but I believe too much in the Suns and the Bucks. And I even without Middleton, I give the Bucks a strong chance against the Celtics. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. There's a lot of water has to come under the bridge before then. But I'll tell you one thing: they both got to play better. The Suns didn't play well as a team in Game Two, even after the Booker injury. The Bucks didn't play well as a team. They couldn't execute in the half court offense. It was kind of like a throwback to before they were the champion. So both of those teams, even if they were healthy, needed to play better. But I will say the Pelicans believe they are a close knit team. They believe, and the Bulls are a team that I didn't think had belief, but DeMar DeRozan DeMar talked about that week off that they had between the end of the season and the start of the playoffs and how they had some tough conversations about roles and about stepping up. And look, they could have easily won game one had DeMar not gone 6 of 25. That game was tight. The Bulls had the lead in the second half in that game. So I think both of those series, while I agree with you guys that it's probably the injuries are not going to change it, I think that they're both going to be dogfights.
Certainly possible. I mean, like you said, we're going to learn about both those teams. You know, they have championship. They've been through the fires. You know, the Suns didn't win, but when you make a run like that to the finals, you've been through a lot of stuff. Like, you know, it forges an identity for a team. Same with the Bucks. They obviously got through that slugfest with the Nets. They got through Giannis getting hurt against the Hawks. They came back from behind and beat the Suns in the finals. Like they've been through a lot of stuff, and you know, they're going to be confident that they can win, you know, not for the least of which, because they've got, in my opinion, the best player on the planet on their team in Giannis. And, you know, they're certainly not going to think they're out of it, but yeah, we're going to learn a lot.
You know who else has been through some fires, and we don't ever talk about them unless their star and coach are engaged in Royal Rumble type of activities, the fight in Miami Heat. And their half-court offense, I don't know, looked pretty good when Jimmy was putting up 45 points with no turnovers the other night. Well,
before we get into that, hold on. Before we get into that.
Uh-oh.
Don't change subject, McMahon, on me like that. Before we get into that.
It's his podcast.
It's last week. Last week when we had Jackie on, this guy forgot about the trivia.
Ooh.
We're not going to forget about what?
No, I'm just giving you a hard time.
Oh, I
didn't do trivia because Jackie Mack was on.
I know, but we would have done the trivia. You think Jackie Mack can't do trivia?
Well, I know, but we didn't want to waste any time on nonsense because we had the legend on.
Well, that's true. But even I'd like to think I'd like to tell you that it was planned out or whatever. But the truth is, I just forgot about it. So, Bontemps, are you prepared for your trivia? Which, by the way, is brought to you by CarMax. Shop online and on the lot with home delivery in select markets. CarMax trivia.
Now it's time for a Hoop Collective trivia.
Obviously, I'm ready. So I was at this game, which we'll maybe talk about last night between the Raptors and Sixers at some point on the pod, including Brian's MVP pick, playing pretty well. And it made me think about the last playoff game that was played here, which was game five of the 2019 NBA Finals, which was the game where Kevin Durant hurt his Achilles. Now, a lot of things have happened in the 1,044 days between those two games. I thought this would be an interesting trivia question. In 2019, like every other year, there are 15 players who were named to the all NBA teams that year. Eight of them have since changed teams. Who are they?
Since 2019, one obviously is Kawhi.
Kawhi is one.
Chris Paul.
Chris Paul did not make all NBA that year.
Russell Westbrook, James Harden.
That's two. James Harden is three.
Did he say Kevin Durant?
Guy, I said Kevin Durant. McMahon did not. That is four.
Oh, okay.
No, nobody had actually said him yet. But yeah, that's
okay,
four.
Thank you.
Four more.
Paul George.
Paul George is five.
Jimmy Butler.
Three more. Jimmy Butler did not make All NBA that year.
Russell Westbrook.
Russell Westbrook is six. No, Russell Westbrook was said. Russell Westbrook said, oh. There's three more. Oh. Three more.
All NBA players who have changed teams since Drew Holiday was an All NBA.
Drew Holiday was not an All NBA player that year.
Ben Simmons was?
Nope.
No? Okay. DeMar DeRozan was? No, he wasn't.
Nope.
No. Okay, so the bigs.
Dennis Schroeder.
No.
Stop. LeBron.
No, he was already on the Lakers then.
Okay, he's already on the Lakers. Nah.
We talked about one of them on the pod already.
It's a wide-ranging podcast, Bontemps.
Yeah.
Not McCollum. Not Brandon Ingram.
Nope.
All right, you stumped us. Go.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, the one we've talked about on the pod already is Kyrie Irving.
I'm done.
Second team. another one was the guy who replaced him, Kemba Walker.
Wow.
And the other one was Blake Griffin.
Wow. God, that's been a long time ago.
Man, I mean, Kemba was an all-star starter in 2019. Don't forget. Started the all-star game.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the Hornets said, we're not paying you the max. We're going to trade you to Boston. And that decision... They got ripped for it at the time. He's their best player pretty much since they came up with the franchise.
And people thought they overpaid Rozier, and Rozier's been good value on that.
They've since given him a contract extension. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right, that was a good one. That was a good one, Bontemps.
We should have gotten Kyrie. I think it's excusable to forget that Blake Griffin.
Blake was the one I didn't think
Kemba.
He'd get. Kemba was iffy. I thought you did.
I think it's excusable to forget that they were all NBA that recently.
One of the reasons why the Hornets didn't give Kemba Walker the full 5-year max that he was hoping for was because they didn't want to get into a Blake Griffin situation, which even though Blake played really well that year, you know, the Clippers were worried about that contract and they turned out to be correct. So, all right. So right before we stopped for that, McMahon mentioned the Heat, who you know, this is the out of the four Eastern series, this from the start had the least appeal, 1-8. The Hawks made a run of it. John Collins came back from injury. The Heat are, you know, once again, doing just fine. And they really put together a nice run at the very end of the season. They've extended it. And Jimmy Butler, who was banged up for a lot of the year, comes back with another 40-point game. I saw that he now has as many 40-point playoff games as LeBron did for the Heat. That's saying something right there. Although games were lower scoring back then, it was still LeBron. So, you know, it was one of the things that happened, you know, when Jimmy Butler got into that dust up with Eric Spoelstra, there was some question out there, boy, are the Heat, you know, and Jimmy wearing each other out, you know, like he's done. Yeah, they are wearing each other out, but you know why the Heat gave him the contract extension and why they're going to stick with him? Because he can put up 40 in playoff games like that. And so that was an indication.
And be part of just smothering defense. Poor Trae Young is in hell right now. 1 of 12 in game one, 10 turnovers in game two. We know he's a proven, you know, playoff performer. No question about that, but it's just – it's not, especially without his primary role man, Clint Capella, not playing in the series. He's just not having a good time. He had a lot more fun in his visit to Cleveland.
Yeah. I mean, no, Clint Capella certainly hurts. I thought the series could be a little more competitive. And I think it's Atlanta's still got a chance to make it more competitive because Trae can get going. But look, we thought all year the Heat had a chance to be a truly elite playoff defense. And it would certainly look like in them shaping up to face the Sixers in the second round. It's going to be very fascinating watching that defense guard, in particular, James Harden. And I think that series is going to come down to the Heat trying to make James Harden into a scorer, and how well can James Harden do doing that. I think for as great as the big fellas playing, I'm sure we'll get to that. That to me is going to be the key to that series. And unlike some of the mistakes and breakdowns that the Raptors have had to allow Harden to kind of dissect them with the pass, I don't think the Heat are going to let him do that. And it's going to be, like I said, to me, really interesting to see how James handles that.
By the way, Bam Adebayo is a guy who is relatively quiet. He's certainly not an outspoken guy, but boy, was he pissed off that he didn't make a top three, much less win the defensive player of the year, and has been very vocal about it. And considering I voted him first, I happen to agree. You know, when the finalists came out and I was going down, like a lot of them were the, you know, just about every ballot, every award, except for maybe one, the top three that I had were the top three. And then I get to defensive player of the year and the guy who I voted first didn't make the top three. And so I'll tell you what, like, I don't think it's going to like materially change it, but like now you got a good Bam Adebayo and an angry Bam Adebayo. And Bontemps, you brought up the big fella. You know, Embiid, one of the reasons why Embiid is so hard to handle is because of we've pretty much never seen a guy this big who can play out in the perimeter like this. I mean, Giannis is that big and plays on the perimeter, but I mean, the end of game three in Toronto, which by the way, let me just say, this is not 3-0 if Scotty Barnes is healthy. Do you agree with that, right, Bontemps?
I mean, you could say it's not 3-0 if Scotty Barnes is healthy. You could also say it's not 3-0 if Gary Trent Jr. was basically not in the first two games of the series. You saw how he played in game three. He looked like Gary Trent again. The first two games, he was a shell.
Because he was sick.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, he was playing. He played in the first two games, but he wasn't actually there. It was just 20% of him. Like he shouldn't have played either game.
This is not a indication of the Raptors, and maybe not even 100% indication of the Sixers.
No, I would. That it's 3-0. No, right. I would say right that game last night. Here's how I would distill game three, because I'm sure 95% of the listeners were watching the other game. Understandably, there were 100 reasons the Sixers should have lost that game last night. The one reason they did was better than the rest, and that was Joel Embiid. That's it. Mm-hmm. Like Joel Embiid in the second half of that game just completely took over and just was a sledgehammer and just decided he wasn't going to lose. And he didn't.
On the final play of the game, they run a stack set. And there was a great breakdown on SportsCenter. They had the audio of Doc telling the players what to do. And then they showed the audio matched up with the play. It was really well done. A great insight. The play itself is a relatively common play in the NBA. It's a diversion play, a jack in the box play, however you want to call it. Look left, we're going to go right. And as soon as Nick Nurse saw the Sixers line up, he guessed what it was. He goes, they're going to do a jack in the box and roll Embiid down to the rim. And Nick Nurse knows strategy, very smart guy, yells over to Fred VanVleet, back off the ball, get down in the paint. I want an extra man in the paint to defend Embiid. And the reason Embiid is special is because of what he did and because of what Doc Rivers believed in him. And you know, I don't want to focus too much on this play, but the concept that you would run a play to get a 7'2" guy the ball in a catch, turn around, square and shoot with 9/10 situation. Find me the 7-footer who's done that. I mean,
how many guys in the league are you drawing that? How many guys in the league are you drawing that play up for, period?
Would you draw that play up for Dirk?
Yeah. Dirk's definitely one. Yes.
Okay. So, yes, okay. Yes, there's
Dirk
one.
Dirk was capable of catching the ball, turning and knocking down 3-pointers, but yeah, no, it's to
that fast in 9/10 of a second.
I mean, Dirk was Dirk exactly coming, a Dirk coming off a square. Yeah. Dirk coming off a screen that fast.
I don't know.
Dirk didn't play his entire career at 38 years old. He was in his 20s once. Yeah,
but he slung the ball back over. Anyway, forget about it. The point is,
but no, for Embiid to be that dominant of a post-up player and also that skilled as a perimeter player, it's phenomenal. Now, for the idea that, oh, hey, the Nuggets are down 2-0 and the 76ers are up 3-0 in the first round, so let's mock people
who
voted
Jokic
about for MVP. No. We are going to just address one thing. Perk is doing his little, you know, whatever on Twitter. Daryl Morey replies, hell is having to carry on with their choice of a number 6 seed as MVP. We know from history, this ages like avocado. Daryl, you are the one who traded Chris Paul and multiple picks to go get that MVP. So you have to sit that out.
I think you went a little bit too fast for our listeners who may not know exactly what you're talking about. Perk, you know, beat his chest a little bit on having Embiid.
It's going to look extremely bad for the people who voted Jokic's MVP.
Yes. And Daryl Morey responded and said that voting basically
hell is having to carry on with your choice of a number 6 seed as MVP. We know from history, this ages like avocado. We made a huge mistake as little GIF. And again,
okay. Daryl, so cool. Just to decode it, when he traded for Russell Westbrook, Westbrook was an MVP from a number 6 seed.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to get that. You went a little bit too fast.
Okay. Well, I think our listeners are familiar. And also, the guy who absolutely positively should have been MVP that year, Daryl can't believe it, it's a crime upon humanity, went 2-for-11 as his team was eliminated in the second round. So, you know, I think the first round is a little silly to do a first round should have been MVP dances.
Kind of amazing. Grand point. It's kind of amazing Daryl Morey's had the MVP of the league on his team for 10 straight years.
And how many finals appearances? Oh, wait. Well, you know, hey, what can you do?
The Low Post podcast brings you some of the best insights into the world of the NBA, hosted by ESPN NBA insider Zach Lowe. Playoffs are here and Lowe will be there with what you need to know. Listen to The Low Post wherever you find your podcasts. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Ah, that sound has to make you smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility.
Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Synchronize your online and in-person sales. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/hoop right now. Shopify.com/hoop.
Well, look, I mean, Daryl will never cease to stand up for his guys. And I guess I can, I can respect that on a certain degree, but I mean, it's also our job to go, hey buddy,
sure.
Let's have some perspective.
Listen, the big fella last night, now the big fella, of course, was very happy to beat the Raptors. He has been letting out a lot of emotion throughout this series. And, you know, Tobias, who, by the way, unsung hero of the series, Tobias Harris, he has been fantastic. Last night, he had 11 points and 12 rebounds. Doesn't look like he had a great game. He was awesome. And if him continuing to play as hard as he's been on defense and kind of doing all the little things, like, he has been a really big impact player for them. That's something to watch going forward. And what I'm really excited to watch is going to be a slugfest series with the Heat, assuming it gets there. But
yeah,
the big fella comes in last night. He's got a brace on his right hand, twisted his thumb. We'll see if there's going to be some issue with that going forward. But, you know, he really wants to win this series, and he doesn't want to admit it because it's a first round series, but that series 3 years ago against the Raptors hurt a lot, and everybody seen the video of him crying, walking off the court. And Joel has said a lot of times that playing the Raptors and struggling against them and struggling against Marcus Gasol and struggling against Nick Nurse's coverages has made him into a much better player. It's made him into a much more complete offensive player. It's led him to go improve all, you know, get this mid-range jump or the three-point jump or all these moves he can make now. A lot of that is a product of playing against this Raptors team and struggling against them over the years. And so he exercised a lot of demons yesterday, even if it's only a first-round series, hitting that shot, winning that game. And, of course, in typical Joel fashion, he comes in the press conference and is grumbling about defensive player of the year. And what is now becoming a common refrain, blame me for not winning it because of the straw poll that it didn't do by defensive player of the year.
No, but boy, you sure did give Marcus Smart a platform to make his case.
Listen, I mean,
did you help with the purchase of that DPOY robe?
I did not.
Bontemps did a story saying that the perimeter player could win it for the first time in X number of years, and the perimeter player did win it.
I'm really impacting all the awards this year. The big fella had no idea I even wrote that story, though. It's just a chance for him to be angry again about the straw poll. But
a chance for him to complain about not winning the MVP, he's pissed off about.
Of course.
And Daryl knows he's pissed off about it, which is why
Everybody knows, which is why he keeps saying to me with a huge bleep-eaten grin on his face every time an awards thing comes up, oh, it's your fault. I was like, all right, great. But look, he has been... When he plays like he did in the third quarter, his first half last night, 5 points, 4 turnovers. He was completely out of sorts. He's throwing the ball a mile out of bounds. One play, I think it was George Yang was in the corner. He threw it 20 feet over his head. I mean, it was like he kind of got transported back in time. The Raptors should have been up 20. They're only up 10. Felt, all right, this is a game where it's time for the big fella to come out, take over. He comes out in the third quarter. Raptors have 19 points. He has 18 points. And he just... bludgeon them to death. And when he's playing like that and attacking the rim and going to the line and being aggressive and fighting through people and scoring, I don't think there's a more dominant player in the league than him when he's playing like that. And that's what they, you know, for all the talk about awards for him, all this other stuff, he's just got to do that for another however many games. And when they get to that series against Miami, James Harden's going to have a hard time. You know, Tyrese Maxey's going to be interesting to see what he could do against the Heat defense. But if the big fella keeps playing like this, the Sixers have a chance to do some special things. And it's just a matter of, you know, can he stay healthy and can he continue to play at this level? Because, you know, the Raptors are trying like hell to stop him, and it just doesn't matter. Like, he's just doing stuff that they ultimately they kind of have to just shrug and say,
yeah, which is why Nick Nurse, we can do. Early in the series, Nick Nurse was making the officiating on Embiid a big factor because.
Well, and one other thing, just because this was funny. So last night, as part of his soliloquy, to use McMahon's phrase from earlier on the podium, Embiid went out of his way to say, yeah, you know, the refs have been a big topic of discussion this series, been a lot of complaining. So I hope those guys were happy tonight with how it was called, because it was a lot more physical, which it was going to be because Mark Davis was officiating the game and he calls basically less fouls than any ref in the league. So you knew going in, it was going to be physical. It was physical. And ultimately it didn't matter anyway, because the big fella just decided they were going to win. And now they're on the verge of ending the series.
But the reason that Nurse was making the officiating such a big deal is because he knew that their only hope against Embiid was to beat him up. He needed the whistle. He needed Embiid called for offensive fouls. He needed to allow his interior guys. And by the way, there were times when Precious Achiuwa did a reasonable job, you know, on him, but he's just so powerful that it's hard to deal with. So in a Miami Philly, with Miami Philly are going to line up, you know, the Heat are going to do a lot of switching. They're going to be, you know, trusting their various players on Embiid. They're going to be trusting, Adebayo to be very versatile. And, you know, Joel and Harden are going to work together. And I'm sure that Eric Spoelstra, while lasered into the Hawks, that they've done some work on how you're going to handle a Harden Embiid two-man game. And I'm already looking forward to it. I mean, I the second round onward of this playoffs, I'm expecting to be some of the best we've ever seen. So
well, look, we've been waiting like for months. We've been waiting for months to see the second round of these playoffs, right? I mean, these teams have been lined up for months. Those four teams at the top of the East have been, you know, they were jockeying from first to fourth from basically mid-January on. And, you know, you got Jimmy Butler going back to Philly. You've got James Harden going up against PJ Tucker. You got Kyle Lowry, Philly native, going back to Philly again, beating them in the playoffs in 2019 with Toronto. I mean, you got Bam and Joel. Like that series is going to be really, really fun. And again, I think it's going to all come down to James Harden. We'll get to that series when it gets to it. But James Harden has been okay so far. He's got to be a lot better than okay if they're going to beat Miami.
Yeah, and I will say that I think Philly, I think they were going to win the series anyway. But Barnes getting hurt, Trent being sick, took out the danger that they were facing with being depleted in Toronto without Thybulle. And they get away with, like, Harden fouled out and didn't get to play overtime, and their offense was wheezing in the half court without Harden, and they get away with it because Embiid hits a brilliant shot. So Philly deserves to be up 3-0, but they got a little
bigger challenges. Yeah. Bigger challenges lie ahead. That's the key. Bigger challenges lie ahead.
All right. There's now a big light on over McMahon's head. I think we need to wrap it because now he's got a halo before.
Poor McMahon is
what
just.
Do you mean, now I've got a halo. I was born with a halo.
This poor right. guy is. He needs his tech support. He's struggling. He's moving locations. He can't get it straight.
I'm just trying. I'm trying my best here, fellas.
Back when it was called the Delta Center, we didn't have these type of problems. All right. Thanks for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios amigos. All right, these lights are distracting me. Also, it's hotter than me.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.